Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. We are here at Firehouse World in San Diego, and today we're looking at truck company tactics based on the West Coast operations. We're going to just go around real quick and get a quick background on everyone that's here, and then we'll get into the show. So, Ed, thank you for joining us.
Hey, good to see you again, Pete. It's Ed Hatfield. I'm a division chief with the City of Coronado Fire Department, and spent a long time assigned to truck company throughout my career. As currently as a division chief, I still maintain an operational role within our organization throughout the region. And primarily been focusing a lot of my career in either performing truck company operations, teaching truck company operations, developing truck company operations, or watching truck company operations from an incident command standpoint.
Okay, Andy.
Hi. Thanks, Pete. Truck captain with the City of Encinitas. I've been on the job now for almost 30 years. Teach at the local community college. Been helped teach and ed here for the past, I think it's coming up on 7 years now. Pretty much everything what Ed said, too. I think we're the strongest push we're trying to make is just trying to coordinate as much of the live training that bridge between theory and practice, trying to get that just a little bit closer, trying to stay as real as possible with training.
Okay, Wes.
Hi, Wes Kitchell from Santa Rosa Fire. I'm a truck company captain up there, been on with the organization 33 years. I think we're all very parallel in our careers. As we've been on trucks for quite a while, doing the training, the hands-on training, developing training materials through various organizations to try and make sure that there's a common approach to what the tasks of truck companies are. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And Todd Wernett.
Yeah, Todd Wernett, Seattle Fire Department, lieutenant on a truck company, 24 years on the job, also very involved with training, with Firetown Training Specialist and department training and regional training in the Northwest.
Okay. And we will put a link to Firetown Training at the bottom of the podcast player page for those of you listening and accessing it through Radio at Firehouse. So please click on that and take a look to see a large variety of classes that you offer, and there's also some downloadable training on there as well. So,
thanks. I appreciate that, Pete.
First question for this podcast. What do you guys see as the main duties of a first due truck company or all the truck companies assigned to a working fire in your district, your respectable districts?
Wes, why don't you take that one?
In our organization, the truck's primary mission is to support the engine company's ability to get a hose line to the seat of the fire. The way we do that is ventilation. We open the building up appropriate to what the type of building is, where the fire is, what it's doing, where it's going to be. The main mission of the truck in our department is forcible entry, to allow them to get in and then support it through vertical ventilation is generally the task or the tactic that we use. We'll employ other ventilation means if the building dictates it because of its configuration or height or size or several other things that we look at. But basically, that's our mission, is to perform ventilation. Search is also a function, but basically left to the engine companies because they're the ones that are operating interior.
Okay.
Looking at that type of thing.
Okay.
No, I agree exactly with Wes. We're in the process in Seattle of changing our whole program. There's a difference between search and rescue. Obviously, a known confirmed rescue, that's what the truck's first responsibility is. But after that, it's ventilation, because ventilation makes everything better, whether we use positive pressure ventilation. The engine company starts off with their own ventilation before we get there, or it's vertical. But we're a very aggressive vertical ventilation department, and that's what we do for the most part.
Okay.
You know, Pete, I'll answer that from my current position as a chief officer. You know, I obviously, arriving on scene, taking command of the incident, have to look at the strategical processes that are in place. And typically we're looking at our strategic process of being that of, you know, life safety, incident stabilization, and property conservation. In any one of those facets, the truck company is a primary fire attack component, which a lot of people don't understand because a lot of people still look at truck company operations, and this is no matter what apparatus you arrive on, as part of a fire ground support function, when in fact it's not. It's actually part of the fire primary fire attack component. So based upon the information that I'm being given by my tactical groups or divisions, then I employ the truck company to develop a tactical plan or task functions that will allow other groups assigned on the fire ground to perform their task at a higher level and at a safer level. One of the things that we would do, obviously, arriving on scene with any type of rescue profile where we arrive on scene of, let's say, a residential structure, nobody is out on the front lawn to give us any indication that all people have exited out of the structure. We assume that at that point in time that there is a high rescue profile. When a building is on fire, people leave the building. Well, if there's nobody outside, then that's indicative that there are people inside the building. And the only way that we can determine that there are no longer people inside the building is to perform search operations. So I will assign companies to provide for effective fire attack, identify, locate, confine the fire while companies are searching the occupancy. And to make that occupancy and to change the behavior of that occupancy, I will assign the truck company to perform whatever tasks are necessary. And both Wes and Todd struck on a couple of those tasks, whether it be creating access and egress portals on the structure through forcible entry operations, whether it's ventilating the building or as we call softening the building by creating multiple points of access into the building to perform those fire attack and search components. That is my job of a chief officer. The job of the truck, again, is basically to identify and locate, identify processes on the building that allow engine companies to operate effectively inside and to change that behavior so that we can do what our primary mission is, which is to protect lives and property through aggressive fire attack and search operations.
I think one of the other key components, kind of add what all the three guys said, is kind of deals with communication. Again, whether you have a three-person truck or a four-person truck, when you're assigned to all these different parts, what's a key component is to try to give some strong feedback to all the other people, either inside or a chief officer out in the front at the ICP, as far as what's going on up on the roof, since they can't see it, kind of helps out with that support function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to touch on that, Pete, is what Andy brings up is that when we're assigning people to roof division to open up the roof to, you know, remove the products of heat, combustion, byproducts of fire, and that to make a more tenable environment inside the structure, one of our obvious concerns is always, you know, fire spread throughout the overhead. We're also concerned about the type of occupancy we're operating on. And really, you know, I don't have a crystal ball at the ICP, so it's imperative that roof division is communicating through their what we utilize is a PPPN principle, personnel position progress and needs principle, as to what they have, what they're doing, where they're located, what needs they may have, and to be able to provide us with that information that is necessary for us to assign further companies to the interior to either aggressively work the overhead or to provide cautionary notes to the people operating inside so that they know what type of occupancy is above them, i.e. some type of engineered construction or conventional constructed methods.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What do you guys see as the most beneficial needs to create a successful truck company, from the newest firefighter in the company up to the company officer and everything in between?
I think starting off as far as young, I mean, you know, it's important to have the experience. I know for us, just up the coast, we try to put our players on the truck that have had at least 3 to 4 years of experience out in the field. But I think the key thing is just trying to stay as much engaged into the job, to have a good basic understanding of construction, tactics and strategy, those sorts of things.
Okay.
Yeah, it's real key.
I think one of the things that, as far as the training and the new members and the like, is the whole idea of having a truck company and having a successful truck company is a mindset within the department to utilize it in the appropriate manner. And there are traditional truck tasks that you can look back in history and in various fire departments, and they're very similar. But it's attention to each one of those details, each one of those pieces of the puzzle, and how it falls into the tactical priorities of the scene. But to train to those things, that's a key thing. I mean, people can be on a piece of equipment, and they can know how to run the saws, and they can know how to use the hooks, and they can have a basic knowledge of forcible entry. But that doesn't mean they're a functional truck company. It just means that they know some of the pieces of the puzzle. To be an effective truck company, I think you have to go to the next step. You have to change the mindset of how the firefighters view their job, how that truck is viewed within the department, how the engine companies relate to that once that truck gets on scene. And that really changes the whole dynamic and whether that truck company is going to be very successful and very efficient, or whether it's just going to show up on the scene, do some basic tasks that, okay, we're a truck, we need to do this, and not really know why they're doing it necessarily. So it's part of the craft of firefighting that you need to be focused on. If you're a truck company, you think like a truck company. If you're an engine company, you think like an engine company. And they're two different animals, two different sets of priorities, two different ways of looking at the building, two different tactical responsibilities. And I think that mindset on that, and it comes from the top down as well as the bottom up, of how that how you focus on those things is really going to make that whole operation successful. And that starts at the academy level, but it just doesn't stop there. You know, once you get on the street, it continues all the way through the career, and the people on that truck have to want to be in that environment and be aggressive at always trying to learn more about what their tasks are on the fire ground, and that will carry them all the way through their career and make them even more successful as they go to different kinds of calls.
That's one of the things that we've stressed when we travel around the country teaching with Firetown in our own individual departments. In the past, the ladder truck has been where people of 20, 25 years then have went to slow down because they run less medical aid calls and they don't do as much. And the old joke about staying in the brown chairs and watching TV and doing that stuff. But you need a certain amount of experience on the truck to teach, but then you need to have the young, aggressive people on the job, because it's an ongoing training program, whether you're doing auto extrication, technical rescue, vertical ventilation, high density forcible entry. It's not a job where you can just show up and not go to work. We split our companies on a regular basis, do two jobs at the same time around the fire ground, and you need to be a motivated, aggressive person to be on the truck. And that's something we've tried to do, change the mindset. And it's hard to do. It really is. You know, our truck doesn't do anything. You know, it's a big joke when the truck goes out on a single alarm, you know, because the engine's not going with him. But when you go, you're going to work. We're the first ones there. We're the last ones to leave. You know, we cut the holes in the roof, and then we got to cover the holes in the roof. You know, so that's one of the things. But you got to have that experience to teach the new people, mentoring people in the fire service, and getting to understand that, like Wes said, this is a craft. It's not a job. It's not a paycheck and an off ramp. We have to live. It's a lifestyle. And whether you're on the West Coast or you're on the East Coast, in fact, even on the East Coast, it's more prevalent. It's a lifestyle of the huge volunteer population that they have back there, which is a fantastic thing. But we have young people coming up in the fire service that 2-year degree, get paramedic school, they're working, and you know, it's they've never done anything but the fire department, but they need to understand that it's a lifetime commitment, on or off duty. Like the gentleman that won the awards this morning, they won awards for heroism and rescuing people this morning, and they were off duty. There's a fire right down the house. You're a firefighter on and off duty all the time. That's what we do. That's who we are. And all the four of us at this table, we believe that 100%. And this is why we do what we do.
You know, I think each and every one of the personnel here at the podcast brings about a specific element that makes a successful truck company. As Andy said, it's picking the right people. An organization has a duty to choose the appropriate person and the appropriate persona to be assigned to the truck company in itself, recognizing that not all organizations have that because of whatever, you know, bid rights that may be there. It is still management's responsibility to see to it that the personnel that are operating on the truck are not only intelligent and highly functional, but have that certain cultural belief in truck company functions. Now, that foundation is based on what your organization's belief is related to truck company functions. You look at any successful fire department here on the West Coast, they are what is normally dubbed as an aggressive truck-oriented organization. And they are highly successful in what they do on the fire ground. They get it. They go hard. You look at organizations that are just more or less the also-rans of the fire department, and they can have multiple trucks or maybe one or two trucks. But if their truck does not function at that high level, then they are not a successful fire service organization. No matter how many calls they run, no matter what they say, no matter what their T-shirt says, if you don't have that cultural belief from, as Wes said, from the top down, then you don't have a successful fire department. And successful fire departments are built on the type of culture that is exhibited by the leadership. And I'll take this into account is that our organization, the Coronado Fire Department, has taken delivery of its first tillered apparatus. Our fire chief made it a number one priority in our organization that our personnel will operate at a certain level on this new tillered apparatus. Therefore, we invested in our people and we invested in their development and their growth by sending them to outside organizations. In fact, we sent them to Andy's organization, the Encinitas Fire Department, and we started that collaboration in our driver's training program. Coarsely and subsequently at the same time, what we did is we developed our own internal truck company operations academy that was mandatory for all people to attend that will be primarily assigned to that truck company. Now, that comes at a cost, but that cost was the burden was borne by the fire department and by the city because we saw the importance of laying that first foundation, that solid growth plan for our people and getting that cultural shift from an engine-oriented organization to a truck-oriented organization. And again, that needed to come up from the bottom, and it was supported by labor, and it needed to be supported and funded and prioritized by management, which it was. And when you see that cultural shift, and where you're not going to see it necessarily day to day, you're going to see it on the fire ground. And we've already seen it. We've had a couple second alarm fires as of late. And when we did get our personnel on scene, they operated at a completely different level. And that level bore in a positive outcome by the fact that they were operating in that aggressive truck mentality. And I think it's important for everybody to understand that just because you're on the truck doesn't make you a truckie. What makes you a truckie is a mentality and a cultural belief that is fed by the organization. And again, organizational culture will drive it. If you believe that it's where, you know, elephants go to die, it'll show on the fire ground. If that's where you put your people that go hard, that'll show on the fire ground, and your citizens will thank you for it.
Okay. Todd, you brought up the numerous responsibilities of a truck company, from extrication to technical rescue, in addition to the fire ground activities. How do you prioritize your training as a truck company, not just having one or two functions, but a half dozen functions or a dozen functions? And again, from Firetown, you're out there training folks every week. So what are the priorities for a truck company as far as training? How do you prioritize from most important to least important and fit everything into a 24-hour tour? when you're still out running?
Well, first of all departments have mandatory required training, whether it's hazardous materials, confined space, technical rescue. Everybody in the department has required training 4 to 8 hours on all these different disciplines. It's really, on top of that, it's up to the individual officer on companies to come up with innovative training ideas to fit that in on, you know, some departments say in Seattle we're required to do 2 to 4 hours of building inspections a day. So we need to prioritize, is training more important, or is going out doing building inspections looking for, you know, extension cords and things like that more important? So most of the truck officers, because we have three engines for every truck in the city. So I make it a priority not only to train my people, but I go out and work with individual engine companies to keep them up on their train rescue skills, ladder skills. We let them run the aerial, do ladder rescues, show them how to use all the equipment on a regular basis, because we actually do multiple trades, vacations. We detail people other stations, so I could easily get engine people, personnel, or paramedics on the truck on a regular basis. So we have to keep up a certain level of training. But it's that high risk, low frequency stuff that you really need to train on. You know, it's the commercial vertical ventilation. It's the high density forcible entry in the downtown core where I work. Every building has scissor gates and bars and different locking mechanisms, and we need to go out on a regular basis. We spend many a weekends going out, grabbing a cup of coffee after we do all of our regular station maintenance, and just walk down alleys and discuss how we break into buildings. I know it sounds funny. You know, we call it a little coffee talk, and we walk around and do that. And just those 2, 5, 10-minute drills on a regular basis, it keeps people's mind in the game. You know, every third or fourth false alarm that we go on, which we go on a lot in a downtown core with high rises and condominiums and things, we spot and go to the roof. You know, that keeps everybody's skill level up to a certain point. We time people going to the roof. I mean, we may block two lanes of traffic for that 10 minutes, but that's our job. That's what we do. You know, and the small inconvenience to that is could easily save somebody's life when it comes to a rescue or things like that. So it's usually up to the individual officer, truck officer especially, because we have so many different disciplines. You know, we cut cars up on a quarterly basis, 2 to 3 cars up on a quarterly basis. You know, we do window bailouts and for firefighter self-rescue and things like that. So we try and mix it up. We try and mix it up and keep it fresh, because if you do the same drills all the time, you can only throw a 35-foot extension ladder so many times before, you know, you got it. Okay, or pull in a pre-connect. I got it. You need to change it up and keep it dynamic and keep it fun for the firefighters, because there's only certain amount of things you can do. Duty.
You know, from my standpoint, having been assigned to training division, and that is I believe that the first thing is that organizationally you have to have standards. And those standards need to be individual performance standards based upon, you know, tools, equipment, certain actions, tasks associated with the fire ground. Outside of the standards, you need to have individual company performance standards that are realistic, time-based, and that people are held accountable. Now, to take that one step further, and I believe to have a comprehensive approach, you need to have multi-company performance standards in which the truck company operates in the normal capacity that it would on the fire ground as part of that multi-company approach. And those standards, again, are timed and individually rated and evaluated, and that people are held accountable. Now, that's from a very straightforward training perspective. Outside of that, the organization owes it to its people to make sure that those people are trained and provided with the tools necessary to maintain their skill sets. There has to be an investment in your people, and that investment includes not only building and developing training props and opportunities within your own organization, but seeking the opportunities to either send people to outside training experiences such as Firehouse World here, or bringing people in to provide training expertise into your organization, and recognizing that in today's budgetary times that's difficult, but it can be done on a regional basis that will allow organizations to do so at a very basic cost and overall cost to the organization. But when you look at that, that's just, again, and I keep going back to that, this is just the fundamentals. What's really imperative is that each organization breaks down their duties and responsibilities based upon tool and job assignments. And I'm actually going to let Wes kind of expand on this, because for the 20 plus years that I've known Wes, he's been talking about this, and he's shown that this approach is just utterly the best way to go about doing your job and honing the craft of firefighting, is by having positional tool and writing assignments based upon incident-based objectives. So, Wes, I'll just turn that over to you.
When we started to develop our truck company a little bit, it was been a while ago. One of the things we looked at was we basically asked everybody we knew that had trucks, what do you do? How do you do it? Why do you do it? And it was quite a mishmash of information that we got back. But one of the things that we really liked, we acquired from LA City Fire, actually, which is, you know, they're very, very large organization. We're not that large of an organization. But what we took from them was they had writing assignments based on where they, or priorities based on where they rode on the rig. And those guys, when they would hit the fire ground, would just take off and do their jobs. And it was very efficient to watch that and to be exposed to that and ride with them and see how they did it and talk to them. And what we found in our department was, because we were at square one, we had a blank canvas, basically. We could paint anything we wanted on it. It was the fact that we looked at what our environment was, what our fires typically were, what our fires could be on a very low frequency situation, but at the same time, that low frequency was probably going to add in a great deal of hazard because it was low frequency. And try and set up our truck company, at the time a single truck company, has now blossomed into two, how we were going to approach that, what were we going to do, how were we going to do it, what people would do what job, where does the experience go, where does the less experience go, who goes with who to partner up so that they're, you know, everybody is safe and not sending someone that's ill-equipped for the task into a position where they're going to be somewhat compromised or unsafe. And what we found is that there's a lot less talk. Everybody knows their job. They're trained to their job, whether it's auto extrication, commercial operations, residential operations, rope rescue, you know, anything like that. We have standards that basically list out, captain does this, firefighter one does this, firefighter two does this, driver does this. And they know when we get there, if we say two-person vent, residential operations, everybody knows their job and key off where they ride in that, on that piece of equipment, what tools they grab, and the tools are set up on the rig so that if you're a tillerman, your irons, you're the forcible entry person, all your forcible entry gear is at the back of the truck where you are. You don't have to go through three or four different compartments. If you're the vent crew, all your ventilation equipment is in one compartment. You pull it out, all your saws, everything ready to go. And what we found is that really built up efficiency. And the time standards that Ed's talking about, everything's got a time on it, and that's not to be, you know, have a chief out there with a stopwatch going, you guys aren't doing your job. That time is used by the incident commander to know that it takes the truck X number of minutes to ladder a building, get in position, have the saws running, be prepared to do ventilation, or to set the aerial, or to throw ground ladders, multiple ground ladders, or, you know, anything else. It's a basic time constraint or a time it gives us a time frame so that they know they can make a judgment call based on what they see and what it's going to be like by the time those tasks take place. And we have it for engine companies as well. But what I've seen is departments that have those kinds of standards are very efficient fire departments. And we make our mistakes. We're like anybody else. There's no perfect fire department. But what it does is it lessens those mistakes on the fire ground. Conversely, I've gone to several fire departments to talk and do training on how to set up a standardized approach to the fire ground. Watching departments that are still basically, for lack of a better term, doing the crapshoot when they get to the fire of what are we going to do, who's going to do it, okay, what chief's working today, what captain's on that rig, you know, kind of a deal. That's when you start going down that path of the domino effect of as soon as one thing tips over, it usually sets something else off, which sets something else off. And those little series of miscues can oftentimes end in a calamity. We see that historically. We love to repeat history. And I'm not saying everything ends in a disaster, but this isn't efficient on the fire ground. And once we have gone in and talked to these departments about setting up standards and go back a year later or whatever, it's night and day. Even they say our job's easier because everybody knows what they're supposed to do. Everybody knows how to react when the incident comes in based on the type of incident. And it's just much more efficient. And it doesn't matter who the officers are, who the chiefs are. Everybody knows their job. And as long as you train to those things, it does make it a safer, more efficient fire ground. And that's the key. As we talk about safety all the time, that's one of the things that creates a lot safer fire ground, because you know where your people are supposed to be and they know what they're supposed to be doing. And I think that's one of the real strengths of having that by riding position, by tool assignment, those kinds of standards. And it should help the incident commander as well by knowing what he needs to do, he or she needs to do.
Wow. I think the only point to add to what's been said already, which is great stuff, I think, because we started doing the standards and timing and assigning tasks. And what's really created helped us out a lot is each person knows exactly what they're supposed to do. What the expectations are. Which are very, very key. And I think what we see now, what that has helped create, was when we arrive, we package the call. We're a lot more proactive than what we hate to see is all of a sudden we start to react to things that are falling apart. But more specific as far what the question you asked, sir, Pete, as far as prioritizing, I think... besides the guys knowing what the expectations are, is just it's kind of simple, but they need to know their tools and equipment as far as specs, operations, safety, maintenance. Okay. Is real key.
And since everyone here is an officer, I'd like to look at risk management. And as a company officer, how do you make that decision, and how do you rely on the rest of your crew to help them help you make your decisions as to what's next or what you're going to carry out on the fire ground?
Well, risk management, that's great. There's all kinds of different ways to look at the risks. That comes up with size up. That comes up with knowing your crew. You know, your size up starts in the morning with who's on your crew that day. Again, we have liberal trade policy, you know, vacations, this, that, and everything else. Who's going to be there? You know, it's all about, for me, when it comes to making my decisions, it's all about diversity on the truck. And my diversity for me is, what do you bring to the company? You know, I'm a truck guy. I'm a vet guy. I've got guys that are rope rescue instructors, people that own their own building construction companies on my crew. So I'm bringing all these different people come together, and they help me make decisions. I can't be an expert on everything. I can't be the most qualified person on everything. So I bring those people into my circle, onto my crew, and I trust them. So I'll ask somebody about building construction. I'll talk to somebody else about the rope rescue or the fire systems when we're turning, shutting down sprinkler systems and things like that. So it's you bring qualified people, you train those people, and then you rely on their judgment. You know, you empower those people to help you make you decisions, because that's what makes a good officer. It's not, you know, what I do. It's what my people do that make me look good. That's all there is to it. And everybody here has been an officer for a long time. They're good at what they do. And my job is to make, you know, train people to take my job and to go on past that, you know. But they help me make the decisions. You know, I make the final decision, but unless it's an absolute emergency, has to be done, where my decision is final, we usually get input, because there's a lot of things in the fire service that don't happen fast. So you get you want to make the best possible decision, so you get the input from trained, intelligent people, and then you make the best decision to move forward.
What kind of input are you looking from the members that are out there? If you're inside and they're on the roof and they're doing their size up, and what kind of radio reports are you expecting back from?
Well, like you had talked about before, the PPPN, you know, who you are, what you're doing, where you are, your conditions, you know, a good communication from the top. If I'm up on the roof and you know, I'm telling them I'm interior from roof division, give me your conditions, you know, engine 22, we're on this side of the building, we have high heat and smoke conditions, you know, so I need to know that'll help me make decisions on where I'm making my ventilation, what I'm doing, is it successful, and so forth. So it's that good communication, the PPPN that we stress, that's with forcible entry, that's with RIT operations, RIT and RIC operations to vertical ventilation. We use that in Firetown as an acronym. It's similar to the CAR reports, the CAN reports, whatever your department uses. You need to have a set standard communication, radio communication, so that everybody knows, especially officers and incident commanders, I'm waiting for this report, and it's in a systematic, given to me in a systematic way, and I'm looking for that information. And if it's not, I don't get what I want, then I have to waste radio time going back and forth trying to pry that information out of somebody. So clear, concise communications using, again, whatever acronym or system that you use to do that.
What's one key component that we try to stress a lot when we're teaching in our truck academies, as well as even at the fire academies at home, is we really need to turn the page on this, what all of us, we grew up with, where the fire officer has all the knowledge. You don't question the fire officer. You don't say anything. You know, we really need to turn the page on that. We still see it a lot out there. But when you have your crew and you start explaining what their expectations are, their rules, whatever, and when you get to communication, really need to stress it. And as a captain, obviously you'd lead through example as well. But on the fire scene as well as just in the station house, we have the final calls on things. But it's real important to trust your people and have them trust you, so that. Since we talk about situation awareness, it's just not up to the fire officer as each person on that truck. It's important to explain any changes in the environment or how they're feeling, whatever, you know, and just start from there.
Okay. Yeah. I think the risk management portion of anything that we do in the fire department comes back to training. It comes back to how well do you train your people and what do you train your people. If they don't know what to look for, if they just go blindly into a fire, it's like, okay, and they learn OJT because they go to a fire, they see something, that's how they learn it. If we don't talk to them about fire behavior and how that's changing and fire loading and type of construction and how the fire is going to change based on new construction components and on and on and on, we're dooming them. We're setting them up to fail. So in my particular environment, everybody has a radio. And sometimes that can be a calamity in itself, because if I have a radio, therefore I have to talk. And in reality, what we've done with that is we've made it crystal clear to them. If you see something you don't like, or it just feels weird, or you see something because of your training that you know is out of the ordinary or is going to potentially be a problem, speak up. Say something. Everybody has a radio designator on the fire ground. Even firefighters on the tailboard have a radio designator. And everybody is given full authority to get on the radio and communicate. Now, that doesn't mean that we have this, you know, mishmash of radio traffic, because the officers are the point people for the crews that deal with the incident commander, and it goes down through the normal chain of command. But if they get separated, if they see something, their officer, you know, something happens to his radio, something, everybody has the authority and the ability to say something. The other part of the risk management is how well you train them with the standards, the time standards, the company standards, the evolutions that you, the way you build those into your system and have people trained to them, that brings a level of risk management and safety into the process. This is an inherently dangerous job. As much as people want to say that we can take all the risk away, that's not real. We're always going to have people injured. We're always going to have people killed, because unless we don't go to fires anymore. So the issue is how do we make them smarter firefighters? Well, you develop standards and operations that make them smarter by training them what to look for and not just charging into a place. You bring safety to the fire ground by making sure that certain things need to happen. I'll give you an example. We have an interior team and an exterior team. The exterior team is the roof division. They go up and do the ventilation. The interior team goes in, provides forcible entry, hook ceiling, quick search with the ticks, things like that. But they're married to an engine company. So on the fire ground, the engine company captain is expecting those truckers to come in and tap him on the shoulder and say, "We're with you." If that doesn't happen, that's a clue that there's been a break. So now we get on the radio and we start tracking, where are you? And this is not something where they're going into a building that's 300 by 300. This is a single family dwelling. So the connection should be very quickly, done very quickly. But those are some of the things as far as risk management. Now, again, truck people operate sometimes in pairs. If they're not in the IDLH atmosphere or in the high hazard area, they might even work individually to do certain tasks outside the structure. Any one of them could see something that the engine companies don't, because they're already stretching lines inside, and they say something to the incident commander. They don't run it through an officer. They go directly to the IC or operations or whoever's running the division and say, "Hey, this is what we see." So a lot of it, I think, comes back to training and how much you put into that or value that particular part of the craft to train them to see what it is that they do. If they're just sitting around playing Nintendo all day, that's not going to help their risk-benefit profile, okay? And a lot of that is going on right now in other non-fire things
culture.
Get pushed in our direction. And unfortunately, we can't sift through them to look at what's really hurting us on the fire ground, because we're so caught up in these other things that we say are priorities because perhaps we do them more than go to fires. So I think it's the training and just the philosophy of the organization that's going to add a lot of reduce the risk to the people that are on the fire ground.
Okay.
Pete, the function of all personnel, as Wes said, on the fire ground is to continually do a risk management size up. In particular, that initial risk management size up, you know, is going to officially begin with the first arriving company officer. Now, one of the things that we stress to our company officers and to our responding chief officers is the understanding of lost time intervals. Talking about, you know, what time of night is it? What time of day is it? You know, how soon do you believe that this fire was reported from the time that it was initially observed, you know, was sent to the point of contact, PD, through the dispatching center, to your time of arrival? Because as we know, the fire grows exponentially, and not only in the interior of the structure, but as it moves from a fire in a building to a building on fire, we begin to expand that risk management model, because the risk begin to expand and expose themselves greater to our personnel and to the lives of the community. So as a arriving officer, whether you're company officer or chief officer, a couple of things you're looking at is, first of all, what type of building am I dealing with? And we're really discussing building profiles. Is this a residential structure? Is this a commercial structure? Is it a industrial structure? Is it a what we would call a multi-use structure or a taxpayer, where you have commercial on the bottom and residential above? We like the East Coast, are getting a lot of those in our communities, even in our smaller communities. But, you know, our communities are becoming more and more dense with residential housing. People have gotten tired of driving an hour and a half to and from work every day. So we are reurbanizing our communities. And with that reurbanization, we have a higher density of housing and a greater risk to the lives of our citizens. Now, I said this in a previous podcast, and I talked about the excellent work that Matt Frattis and Mike Alder have done out in San Bernardino City at really understanding and getting our company officers to believe in and having a significant, strong risk profile management process, which they call a dynamic risk assessment. And we have emphasized that in our organization and have emphasized it wherever we teach, is that we need to capture a complete survey of the structure. Now, obviously not all first arriving company officers can do it alone. Based upon the incident, they may have to delegate it out. But at some point in time, somebody's got to do a 360 on this structure and provide that and communicate that information back to the incident commander so that the incident commander can start making and assigning appropriate resources to task and tactical functions to do a couple things. And the first and primary is what? We have to identify whether we have people in there. And the only way we can identify it is through face-to-face verbal contact with the occupant of the house indicating that all personnel have exited, or we do a primary search. So I'm going to place people inside a burning building if I haven't gotten an occupant that has come out and said, everybody is accounted for, and here they are, and can point to them. Up until that point, every occupancy in a residential profile will be searched. Now, obviously, if it's Bob's Tire and lube at 3 o'clock in the morning, that changes our risk management and our rescue profile. But residential, which is the primary number of occupied or occupancy type structure fires that we fight, and don't let the statistics fool you. We are not going to fewer fires nationwide. We're maintaining the same number of structure fires as we had over the last 18 years. Statistics have shown between 500 and 550,000 structure fires per year nationwide. Now, the number of fires in any one given particular area may have diminished because, well, either we burned them all down and they've rebuilt them and added fire protection systems, or just the change in the dynamics and the demographics of that area. Places in throughout the nation that used to be heavily known for heavy fire activity have now diminished, and places that were kind of the urban flight are now subsequently the heavy fire activity levels. Because why? Because of the age of the structure, the change in demographics, and so on and so forth. So when we look at our residential structures, we say, what's hurting our firefighters? What's the risk management that I need to establish for my firefighters? Well, if it's a fire in a building, it's a hostile event. And what do I need to do to mitigate that hostile event? If it's a building on fire or a fire in a building that's transitioning to a building on fire, I need to be worried about not only the hostile event, so I need to do a good, strong, dynamic risk assessment for hostile event recognition. And then I also need to start looking at the possibility of structural component collapse. Now, with that, the truck plays a significant role, because whether the truck officer assigned as the outside man is doing a complete 360 and getting that dynamic risk assessment and getting that read on the structure and feeding that information back to the incident commander, or it's the person that's assigned as the inside man inside pulling ceilings, aggressively checking the overhead, doing a hasty search, tying in with that fire attack team and seeing to it that they are operating in a safe environment and aggressively working the appropriate fire streams and have the right line selection to reduce and mitigate the potential of exposure to a hostile event. Now, those are just the basics. Let's talk about and broaden it out from a strategical standpoint. What do I do as an incident commander, as an arriving chief officer, to see to it that I have got a strong risk management model working for me? First of all, I division it off. You heard each and every one of these guys here say roof division. Why? Because the roof is the divisional group, and we put people in tactical functions, fire attack, search, extension, whatever it may be, or we division the occupancy off, A, B, C, D, roof, or, Division 1, Division 2, Division 3, based upon the height and number of floors, interior of the structure. That allows the incident commander, whether it's the company officer or the chief officer that's arrived on scene, to have a good operational model to work from that, again, reduces the chances of losing company's interior. It gives them a model to work from a good, strong communication package. He identifies and prioritizes his tactical and strategical functions on the fire ground, and he's talking directly to those that are directly affected and operational and are the eyes and the ears of the IC. It is imperative that people understand that when you are doing that, you are creating a risk management model that is safe and effective on the fire ground. And I cannot emphasize enough how important it is that the truck plays in that role. Specifically, if you have the opportunity, and our friends on the East Coast are going to laugh when we say a four-person truck, because many of them are five or six-person trucks, which is very rare here on the West Coast, but a four-person truck where you can do split company operation, where you go two up, two down, and at times, even sometimes, where some person will break off and do independent action as long as he's not exposed to the IDLH environment. Maintaining that radio communication with a task or group assignment or with the IC. We can still operate that way, operate effectively, operate functionally in a strong risk management profile. But those are some of the things we're looking at, and that's the way I think we balance it out between a safe and effective fire ground operation and arriving on scene and winging it. You know, and I always say, you know, hoping for the best is never an action plan. So you better figure it out before you get there.
Okay. Before we close out, are there any closing comments, any final thoughts from anyone here?
No, just welcome back to San Diego, Pete, and we look forward to seeing you out and about.
Well, thank you guys again. We had Ed Hadfield, Andy Mie,
Mejia,
Andy Mejia, yeah, okay. Wes Kitchell, and Todd Warnett from Coronado, California, Encinitas, California, Santa Rosa, California, and Seattle, Washington. Guys, thank you very much for joining us. You're all with Firetown. We're going to put a link to Firetown training on our website. And thank you for joining us.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio. We'll be right back.